And now we present the next instalment of our weekly radio drama, The Vatican Centuries, looking back at the people and places who made up the history of the Vatican. Episode 39 is entitled Secular Tides.
The cult of rationalism reached its peak sometime in the 18th century. Everywhere, men were rising against injustice, seeking equality, preaching freedom, the abolition of privileges, the rights of man.
Europe in the early 1700s was preoccupied with the Wars of Succession. It was the era of the professional soldier, and for Britain, the start of empire building. Canada fell to the British in 1759. Robert Clive won supremacy in India, and in 1770, Captain James Cook dropped anchor off the coast of Australia. The Fifth Continent was on the map.
Men were still pitting their strength against nature. Mont Blanc, the highest mountain in Europe, was scaled for the first time.
As the century advanced, a significant change was in progress. Industry no longer depended on manual labour alone. With the invention of James Watt's steam engine in 1769, mechanisation had arrived.
In the prevailing spirit of scepticism, Freemasonry was born. But paradoxically, it went hand in hand with an evangelical revival, the foundation of Methodism and the hymns of John Wesley. The first critical studies of the Bible also appeared at this time.
An age of wit and elegance, of lax morals, powdered wigs and painted faces, fluttering fans and coffee houses. The age of Casanova, but also of Dr. Johnson, of the political thought of Rousseau and the satire of Voltaire, of Haydn, Mozart, Handel and the soaring music of Bach.
For the papacy, it was a time of decadence and disintegration, and with the suppression of the Jesuits, the popes lost their last faithful ally.
Slowly, the world was moving towards secularization.
The 18th century was undistinguished in its popes, who were more involved in defending the papacy and keeping the papal state solvent than in undertaking any great enterprises. "I prefer to let the thunders of the Vatican rest," was the comment of Benedict XIV, who was well aware of the weakness of the papal position.
Benedict was elected after a six-month conclave, during which he remarked, "If you want a saint or a politician, elect someone else. If you want a good man, elect me."
The good man was elected and proved an enlightened ruler, doing a lot for the city of Rome. The Colosseum was constantly used as a quarry for travertine. Benedict saved the amphitheatre from total destruction. He had a cross erected in the centre and declared it a sacred place because of the blood of the Christians which had been spilt there.
By far the most formidable task confronting the popes of the time was the decision on the future of the Society of Jesus. For two centuries, the Jesuits had faithfully served the popes. They'd become a powerful force in the church and in the world. Confessors to kings and queens, their work in the missions was impressive, and their schools a byword. Their influence was worldwide. Since their obedience was directly to the Pope, they were not confined by national loyalties.
All these factors combined to make them steadily more unpopular with the enemies of the papacy. Their very success proved their downfall, and when reports of Jesuit intrigues began to circulate, the Great Society came under direct attack. Political groups outside the church, the Bourbon princes in particular, and the Jansenist party within, put pressure on successive popes.
Although the Society of Jesus was never officially condemned, it was systematically dismembered. Country after country closed its doors to the Jesuits. In the January of 1769, the Spanish, Neapolitan and French ambassadors in turn demanded that the Pope suppress the Society.
76-year-old Pope Clement XIII refused point blank, declaring that he would rather have both his hands cut off than do so. A few days after this encounter, the old Pope died of a heart attack. He'd just finished blessing the candles for Candlemas.
Clement XIV was elected Pope in May 1764, after a three-month conclave, during which voting was repeated 179 times. He was chosen because the cardinals representing the Bourbon courts believed he would suppress the Jesuits, while the others were sure he would not. Clement delayed decision as long as he dared.
But at last the papacy was forced to relinquish its closest ally. On July 21st, 1773, the Pope issued a brief suppressing the society. Subsequently, Clement lost interest in its fate, and shortly after his death, a year later, the Jesuit general, Father Lorenzo Ricci, died in imprisonment in Castel Sant'Angelo. On the 26th of July, 1770, Pope Clement received a young Austrian boy in private audience and conferred on him the Order of the Golden Spur. The boy who'd been so honoured was a 14-year-old musical prodigy from Salzburg. His name, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart.
Leopold Mozart and his son arrived in Rome on the Wednesday of Holy Week 1770. They went straight to the Sistine Chapel, where Allegri's Miserere was being played. Afterwards, Mozart wrote down the entire score from memory, to the amazement of all who heard of it. For the piece had not been published, and the singers had been forbidden to transcribe it, on pain of excommunication.
Mozart was born in 1756. At the age of four, he was playing the harpsichord and composing. 2 years later, his father took Wolfgang and his sister on the first of many musical tours. In Vienna, the Emperor Francis I sat beside him as he played, calling him his little magician.
But fate was not kind to Mozart. For most of his short adult life, he lived on the edge of bankruptcy and was buried in a pauper's grave. The day he died, it was raining, and his friends turned back at the city gates. Only his dog followed Mozart to his last resting place.
In a century rich in sublime music, Mozart was supreme. He lived only 35 years, but in that time wrote over 600 works, including 50 symphonies, 29 string quartets, 19 operas, and some 50 church works, of which 17 were masses, and his deathbed requiem, which he believed to be his own.
A few years earlier, a genius of quite another stamp was in Rome, Germany's greatest poet, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. He was present at one of the most popular of Roman festivals, the Feast of Saints Peter and Paul. The following is an extract from his diary for the 30th of June, 1767.
The great feast of Saints Peter and Paul has finally come. Last night we saw the illumination of the cupola, a sight resembling a fantastic legend. One can hardly believe one's eyes. The beautiful shape of the colonnade, of the church, and above all of the cupola, first sparkling with 1,000 burning lamps, and then, when the hour strikes, transformed into a feast of fire, is a unique and magnificent spectacle. The sky was pure and calm. The moon shone sweetly and poured what was like a luminous vapor onto the flames of the lamps. But at the end, when all became fire, the splendor of the moon was dimmed. It is only when we think that this enormous building at that moment serves only as a framework that we realize that nothing quite like it can be seen anywhere in the world.
Been listening to episode 39 of The Vatican Centuries, written by Jill Bevilacqua and produced by Sean Patrick Lovett. You can hear the next episode at this same time next week.